about.
لن أعيد.
I will not repeat what we said before. If I remind you about it, it's only to be brief, because there are many issues, many new matters which we must raise to the public opinion regarding what we are confronting today, the event which we are witnessing. And I will only remind you by pointing out, and whoever wants to look into it and look into the details can go back to the press conference which I held, or the press conference which were also held, whether it be the judicial press conference or the press conference about the telecommunications which were held by certain experts and by certain officials. Of course, speaking to you tonight is the occasion. I speak to you tonight because of the occasion of the so-called release of the indictment against some of our brothers, resistance fighters, who have an honorable history in confronting the Israeli occupation in Lebanon. This indictment, which was released the last couple of days, in our point of view, this is a step on a long path. This path has begun to be clear. The clarity of this path and this direction is becoming clearer. After the defeat of Israel and the victory of resistance in the July 2006 war, and after the 14th of August, just a few days after we achieved victory in the July 2006 war, the Le Figaro French newspaper on the 19th of August 2006, 5 days after the end of the July 2006 war, in its article, the Le Figaro newspaper said that the investigation is going towards targeting Hezbollah or leaders or members of Hezbollah, targeting them and accusing them of being behind the assassination of the martyr Rafiq Hariri. Previously, we commented on this and we said that this was prepared and they were awaiting the result of the war. And because of the result of the war was different, for this reason, they quickly displayed this sword or this weapon against this resistance which had achieved victory. We also explained previously that this direction or this path has many aims which they want to achieve, many goals they want to achieve. After, we can't say the end, complete end, but after the beginning of the end of accusing Syria, after they ended the issue of targeting the four generals or accusing the four generals, we then came Hezbollah. There were many aims and goals, and we, together with other politicians and personnel and media outlets in Lebanon and in the Arab and Islamic world, we cooperated to overthrow these goals which they wanted to achieve. We were very clear before, we cannot cancel the tribunal because it is a decision made by the Security Council which is controlled by the American will. And because the tribunal has a certain direction and certain goals which it wants to achieve, whatever be the repercussions or whatever be the losses or gains. And so for this reason, we went to another stage and we said that this direction, this path has aims. Let's prevent these aims from being achieved. And you remember that we spoke about tarnishing the image and the reputation of the resistance and its leaders and its members, its mujahideen, its fighters. We also spoke about the aim to nail the determination of the resistance and its leaders and its mujahideen. And what is most dangerous of all is that another aim was to create divisions in Lebanon, a civil war in Lebanon, and specifically a sectarian conflict between Sunni and Shia and Sunni in Lebanon. These are the main aims which we had spoken of before. Now, the timing of the indictment, the special aim of the timing, we will speak about during the speech. Now, based upon all this, I will speak about three main subjects. You know, I always have an index for my speeches. The first main subject is regarding the investigation and the investigators and the investigative committee in their two stages. We all remember that the investigation, there was investigative committee, there were two stages actually. The first stage was the international investigative committee, and the second was after the formation of a tribunal and the appointment of Belmar as the special prosecutor. After that, the investigative committee was cancelled out and the investigation was assigned to the special prosecutor of the tribunal, who is Mr. Daniel Belmar. So the first subject is the investigation and the investigators. The second main subject is the tribunal, this tribunal, which is headed by Mr. Kesizi, who is the president of the tribunal and who is demanding of us to abide by this tribunal or to accept abiding by this tribunal, and they are even demanding of those who are accused to abide by the tribunal in order to prove their innocence. And the third main subject of my speech will be the stance towards the indictment and how we shall deal with the upcoming stage. And I will speak to the people. First of all, I will speak to the March 14 and their supporters, and I will also speak to the supporters of the resistance in these matters. This is the main index of my speech to you tonight. Now we will begin with the first main subject. Regarding the investigation, I divide it into other points. First of all, the investigation, it's very well known that this investigation must uncover the truth or reach the truth. One of our problems regarding this investigation is that it took one direction. First of all, Syria, the four generals, the security services, Lebanese and Syrian security services, they ended this direction. Then they took the direction or the path of Hezbollah, or the leaders or members of Hezbollah, individuals from Hezbollah. Last year, we said, okay, there is another path which we must look into. There is another alternative, another possibility, the Israeli possibility. I held a press conference and I displayed a lot of evidence related to the Israeli reconnaissance planes, how Israel carries out assassinations, the Israeli spies who are now arrested, who are in Lebanese custody, and their confessions about carrying out logistical missions and helping Israeli commandos units to enter Lebanese territory. I also spoke about spies who were at the area of the crime just one day before the assassination of Hariri was carried out. So we also presented a lot of evidence in this regard, and we said, okay, here you go. This could be a beginning to look into another possibility. The question is, did Mr. Belmar or the General Prosecutor's Office or anyone in the International Tribunal or anyone in the world who alleges they want to achieve justice, they want the truth, did they show any concern regarding this Israeli possibility? No. They only called for a copy. They requested a copy for this evidence, so this evidence was displayed on television. They requested a copy of this evidence, and they said this evidence is not enough, not sufficient. But in addition, I want to say, after the amendment or before the amendment, Mr. Kesizi and Mr. Belmar, they wanted to base something upon evidence. They spoke about circumstantial evidence. Legal experts know about circumstantial evidence, and in the press conference which was held by MP Mohammad Raad and the expert Samir Israisati, they explained this. They said that Belmar wants to depend on circumstantial evidence. Of course, I don't have time to speak about the circumstantial direct evidence. They said it's impossible to reach direct evidence, so he accepted circumstantial evidence which doesn't lead to a clear result. This circumstantial evidence which Kesizi speaks about and which Belmar speaks about, if we compare them to the evidence which we presented regarding possible Israeli involvement, this would have been enough to accuse Israel. But he didn't do this. And this is not according to our perspective. We, of course, resorted to judges on the Lebanese level and the international level. And they said this evidence about Israeli involvement, if the special tribunal focuses on circumstantial evidence, hence this evidence about Israel is enough to accuse Israel. However, regardless, Belmar or Francine, nobody in the international community asked a question to the Israelis. They didn't even ask the Israelis anything. Why were you practicing surveillance above above Beirut? Why were you monitoring above the Saida Road? Why were you spies there? No, no questions of such were asked. Why? Because this tribunal, ever since it was formed for a clear political aim, and it is not allowed, nobody is allowed to investigate with Israel or with the Israelis. A decision was made by the International Investigative Committee regarding the Jenin massacre. No, the Israelis didn't allow anyone to investigate with them regarding the Jenin massacre. So this is number one. This is first of all. The question to those who want the truth, this is evidence. If you speak about circumstantial evidence, then here we go. Here we go. And it's not me or Hezbollah. We cannot hold a complete investigation and present to Mr. Belmar. It is enough. There are even some things which began because of rumors or analysis from here or there, and they based the direction upon this analysis or rumors. However, we presented evidence which is enough to base an investigation on. However, they didn't focus on this evidence because the investigation is politicized and so is a tribunal. Instead of investigating with the Israelis, no, they cooperated intelligence-wise with the Israelis and they got information from the Israelis as well. Instead of investigating with the Israelis and questioning them, they got intelligence information from them. Melas confessed to this when he answered a question by the Le Figaro newspaper in 2005. Melas answered and he said, we are cooperating intelligence-wise with the Israelis. We get information from them. Can you imagine that Israel, which could be a suspect, is actually providing the International Investigative Committee with circumstantial evidence? And Lieberman, the Israeli foreign minister, in November 2010, in a joint press conference with the Italian foreign minister, Franco Frattini, he said the following: Israel's cooperation with the international community regarding the issue of Hariri was really open cooperation and it happened with all transparency. So instead of the Israelis being questioned, instead of the Israelis being investigated, no, there was cooperation with them. Number three, I have a question also regarding the investigation. Everyone knows that when the tribunal was formed and when Belmar was assigned as special prosecutor, a new title came out. Beirut was the center, was the place where the investigative committee was existed. The computers were here, the investigators were here, their files were here. And they have also a base outside, but they were based here before. When the investigative committee was cancelled and it became part of the international tribunal and part of the office of the general prosecutor, a lot of the employees, a lot of the investigators, and a lot of the equipment and files were taken outside Lebanon. Here only an office was left, not the main base. So the employees, they left via Beirut's airport. Some of the equipment also left via Beirut's harbor or airport. Usually, the Lebanese official institutes, if they want to take equipment, transfer equipment or people, they have the Beirut harbor or the Beirut airport or the border with Syria. Everybody left except the computers which are linked to the investigative committee. 97 computers, and I believe this contains all the information because the investigative committee had 97 computers. Around 97 computers. What is very strange is that these computers were transported via Nakura to occupied Palestine, to Israel. And we have an Israeli document which we will display to you, which we will present to you, which confirms in a list, which confirms what was transported via the border and via the Israeli customs. The question here to Prosecutor Belmar is, why would you transport 97 computers with all the information they contain, all the data analysis, names, documents, confessions, recordings, audio and non-audio recordings, while you transport them via Israel? Why do you transport them via Beirut's harbor or Beirut's airport? Why via Israel? And in Israel, these computers To whom were they sent? What did they do with them? What happened to them? And we all know that Israel is a very, very developed country when it comes to technology, highly technologically developed, especially in electronics. Can Mr. Belmar answer? Let him answer. Why were these computers of the International Investigative Committee, why shouldn't they go directly from Beirut to The Hague? Why did they go via Israel? Now, let's look at the Israeli document, if we can look at it. International Investigative Committee were sent via occupied Palestine on the 7th of the 8th of 2009. 97 computers of the International Investigative Committee with all of the information were sent from Lebanon via occupied Palestine, and this was part of the change of the process of changing the location of the International Tribunal in Lebanon. Although all of the international institutions in Lebanon transport their equipment via Beirut's international airport or Beirut's harbor, and all of this equipment was transported for reasons which everybody is aware of. We will now display to you an Israeli document which shows the number of this, 29,148. This, of course, is for the International Investigative Committee, and then we will display the contents of this document. This document is for the Israeli Customs, an Israeli Customs document. Here we can see the date, 8th of the 7th of 2009. It was signed by the Israeli tax agent. This is the number which we can see here, file 29,148. It shows the number of the computers, 97 computers in all. So 77 plus 20. Well, this is what we mean by 97. This is number three. Number four, we will continue regarding the investigation. If there is a fair, just, noble investigation, this investigation must depend on experts and officers and advisors who are neutral, at least, neutral, non-biased, who have no enmity or no preemptive stance or no negative background towards the side which is supposedly accused, whom they want to investigate with. However, this international investigation, especially over the past few years, the officers, the investigators, the experts, the advisors, all of those people who were depended on, they are officers who have a negative background towards the resistance, a negative background towards Islamic movements. They are also linked to the American and British intelligence agencies, and one of the most important experts and advisors to Prosecutor Belmar, as you will see very soon, one of them is a high-ranking officer in the CIA who was accused for over 10 years or for over 15 years. He was in Lebanon and he was working against Hezbollah. He was working against the Marty Ahmad Mughniyeh, Hezbollah's former top military command, and he is a partner in the CIA's responsibility regarding the massacre in Bir al-Abd, which happened in 1985, which targeted Ayatollah Muhammad Sayyid Muhammad Hussein Fadlallah, and which led to the martyrdom of tens of people, around 100 people, men, women, and children, in that place, Bir al-Abd, which is in southern Beirut. So this is a summary. Officers, experts, and the advisors of Mr. Belmar, they are people who we could put within the context of people who have preemptive stances. They are not non-biased or neutral, people who are looking for the truth. In addition, we can also look at this issue, some of these officers. I'd like to draw your attention to the last part of what we will show regarding the American officer with the CIA. And we have also displayed to you some parts from Arab television. Focus, please, on these images. The name is Najib Nick Kaldas. He is Australian of Egyptian origin. He was the former leader of the investigation from year 2009 until year 2010. His role was to follow up the investigation. Formerly, he was an officer in Australian police, and he also has links to the CIA. And he worked in Iraq as well in year 2004 to put together an intelligence unit for the Iraqis at the time of the American occupation. The second name, Michael Taylor, who is of British citizenship, and he was responsible for the investigations currently in the tribunal from year 2010 until today. His role is to draw the strategies of the investigation via his former position as part of the technical investigation. He was a former intelligence officer in the anti-terrorism unit of New Scotland Yard, British police, focused in combating Islamic terrorism. That's his main specialty. Third person. Daryl Mendes, American. He's responsible for the hunting down suspects in the general prosecutor. His role is to hunt down, as we said, the people. He is very closely linked to the different American agencies like the CIA and the FBI. He does still cooperate with the CIA and the FBI. He is a former officer in the American Navy as a legal expert or as a general lawyer. The name Dured Bsharraoui, Lebanese, in addition to also carrying the French citizenship. He is the legal counsel to the general prosecutor. His role was to present the legal advice to the general prosecutor in all issues, big and small. He is the first person who spoke preemptively about accusing Syria and the Lebanese and Syrian security services of being behind the Hariri assassination. He also has negative political stances, which are well known, against the resistance movements and especially Hezbollah. He played a negative role in many legal rulings which were made, and including the issue of the false witnesses. Robert Burr, American. He is an advisor in the General Prosecutor's Office. He is an expert in Islamic movements, especially Hezbollah. That's his role. He is a former officer in the CIA, and he still maintains a linkage to the CIA. He worked in Lebanon for years on tracking down martyr Imad Mughniyeh. He also participated in Lebanon in many acts against Hezbollah. And after William Buckey was kidnapped, who is an official in 1984, he entered Lebanon, or an expert, an officer from the CIA, Robert Burke, entered Lebanon, and his main mission was to identify who kidnapped Mr. Buckley. In 1985, the CIA decided, which was headed by William Casey at that time, decided to take revenge via assassinating Sayyid Muhammad Hussein Fadlallah, may peace be upon his soul. On the 8th of March 1985, a big explosion occurred near the house of Sayyid Muhammad Hussein Fadlallah in Bir al-Abad in southern Beirut. And this led to the martyrdom of around 85 people and the wounding of over 200. Sayyid Muhammad Hussein Fadlallah survived that attack. The activities of Robert Burke continued in Lebanon. His intelligence activities continued, and he worked on targeting Hezbollah in many different areas. And part of his mission was to hunt down Imad Mughniyeh, Hezbollah's former top military commander. However, he failed in being able to track him down. This is an interview by the Abu Dhabi satellite channel with Mr. Robert Burr. Robert Burr is his name. A question posed to him. You were assigned with the task of hunting down Imad Mughniyeh, of monitoring him. Imad Mughniyeh, who was assassinated 2 years ago in Damascus.
Was a terrorist to start off.
As you can hear, he says he was a terrorist. Another question posed to him, you were assigned with a task of following, monitoring him for 15 years. However, you say that every time you got close to him, the puzzles about him, the mysteries about him increased.
He was truly a man that was a gorilla. He would never come out the same entrance he went in.
You can hear what is being said, explaining how Imad Mughniyeh was someone who was very difficult to track down. And he's saying he even pursued the efforts to kidnap Imad Mughniyeh but failed. He wasn't able to reach him.
فكان يتحرك دائما وكان محاط بالكثير من الحماية.
Can we say that it was an intelligence failure, an American intelligence failure to reach Mughniyeh?
نعم. كان فشلا ذريعا.
In 1997, Robert Burr resigned from the CIA. However, he remained very close to the CIA and he kept the linkage and the contacts open to the CIA and took advantage of his previous intelligence experience in order to carry out certain advisory activities or consultation activities. 2010, Robert Burr emerged once again, but this time in the office of a general prosecutor of the tribunal as an advisor and an expert. However, the target was again Hezbollah. So what does this point tell us? This quote tells us that those who were assigned with the task of uncovering the truth, they are these types of people whom you just saw. Some of them are against us, some of them have a negative stance, some of them are killers, some of us are conspirators, some of them are spies, and most of them, or all of them, are linked to the American intelligence agencies. Such a team with Mr. Belmar, let's forget Mr. Belmar, let's put him aside, but this team with him, is this a team which leads to uncovering the truth? Is this a team which is qualified to work on the possibility of Israel assassinating the Martyr Rafiq Hariri, even if they are given more evidence than we gave last year? Number five, we add, in addition to the unprofessionality of the investigation and the background of the investigators, we will add to this the corruption of the investigators. The investigators or the investigative committee, if they are neutral people, okay, but if they are corrupt, we cannot reach the truth and justice cannot be achieved. Isn't this so? We are now up against an investigative committee, and we will give you an example. One example, who is Mr. Gerhard Limmen, who I spoke about before in a previous speech. Gerhard Limmen was the deputy to Millis, the deputy head of the International Investigative Committee before the tribunal was formed. Millis is well known, we don't need to speak about him, and I believe that the time whereby Limmen and Millis lived in Lebanon, this time was a golden time in their lives at all levels, especially at the level of corruption. Now, we have the deputy head of the International Investigative Committee who is selling documents, selling confessions, selling testimonies, a complete file. He sold it for money. And you will see now You will see here what we will display. Now, if via the money he betrays the witnesses who testified, some of them are high-ranking politicians, and if Mr. Belmar or if the International Tribunal wants to investigate, we don't have any problem. We will broadcast the film, but we don't have any problem to give a copy, to give over a copy of the documents which was sold by Mr. Lemon, who is the deputy head of the International Investigative Committee. If he sells documents, and if he's given money, what does he do with the evidence? What does he do with the information, with the facts? Where does he take them? Where does he falsify them? If with a few tens of thousands of dollars, it's not a lot of money, tens of thousands of dollars he gave this file, if he's given 1 million, 2 million, 10 million, if there were people who paid $500 million to tarnish the image of the resistance or the officers or Syria, if they pay, they can pay 10 million to Lemon. What will he do in that case with the investigation? So the fifth main subject is the financial corruption and the ethical corruption. Of course, ethical corruption is endless, but as a religious scholar, I don't want to open this, the ethical corruption of Lemon and Millis. But let's focus on the financial corruption. We'll now witness this, but we must focus on the picture and the images. Focus on the middle part of the screen. There's a hand giving money. Focus on it. The name Gerhard Lemon, who is German, he was formerly in German intelligence. He was the deputy head of Detlef Millis, who was the leader of the International Investigative Committee. During his time in the German intelligence, he worked on different parties and organizations who were against the Zionists. During the international investigation, he tried to enter into many deals. He proposed to Jamil Said, one of the four generals, the well-known deal. Number two, he also got money in order to turn over information and documents. We will now look at a film for Gerhard Lemon, whereby he gets money in January 2006. He gets some money which he got for selling some reports and some documents related to the international investigation. As you saw, he's very happy with this money as well. Of course, after that, he also took the initiative and contacted some groups and said he needed money. And he also took the initiative to turn over information in exchange for money. We announced this before. Did anyone take any steps to investigate with this issue of corruption and its effect on the investigation and the information and data and the files which Mr. Lemon, one of the leading investigators, had in his possession? Number six, the involvement of the International Investigative Committee with false witnesses. They are involved with the false witnesses. This is a separate file. If you remember once again what we saw together on New TV in Hakika Leaks, Truth Leaks meaning, this shows how the investigative committee was sitting down with the false witnesses and those who fabricated the false witnesses in order to take the investigation into towards a certain direction. I'd also like to add that Mr. Belmar personally, we have information information and we have evidence, but we will delay it until due course. We don't want to uncover everything today. Mr. Bill Maher personally worked and followed up himself via many officials. He followed up personally the issue of taking off the arrest warrant on Mr. Zuhair al-Saddiq, one of the main false witnesses. He was responsible for taking the arrest warrant off him. Why? Because they are involved in the issue of Zuhair al-Saddiq. For this reason, they wanted to protect him. When we speak about the tribunal, I'll go back to this. Number seven, the secrecy of the investigation. One of the main conditions for any investigation to reach the truth is secrecy. All the Lebanese and everyone in the world, in the Arab and Islamic world and the whole world, all of us are aware that this investigation had no secrecy. It was all leaked to magazines, newspapers and television. Years ago it was leaked. What is left of the secrecy of this investigation, which is issuing indictments? Even when the International Investigative Committee called on some of Hezbollah's brothers to go to investigation, we accepted and they went to the investigation. This was all, of course, in a formal way, because they had ended the process. The aim they wanted to achieve had ended. We told them, for the sake of regaining trust with the investigation, stop the leaks. However, the leaks didn't stop. The leaks, of course, number one, they are related to corruption. If you have money, they leak information as much as they want. You can get as much information as you want. Number two, in order to penetrate from the security perspective, this person is related to Canadian intelligence, the other to the Australian, the other to the French, the Italian. Of course, the March 14, they also have people who are close to them in the International Investigative Committee and the Tribunal, and they give the March 14 detailed information about what's going on. Otherwise, where did the March 14 get all the information from? Number three, there is also deliberate leaks. There are deliberate leaks being made by the International Investigative Committee and by the Tribunal, because what is required is to tarnish the image of the resistance, and hence it's not enough that after years we issue an indictment. No, from the year 2006 we must begin with the leaks in order to tarnish to ruin the reputation, to create enmity and to create people who hate the resistance via this indictment. So the leaks, some of these leaks are deliberate in order to achieve the aim or one of the aims, which is to tarnish the image of the resistance. So where is the secrecy of the investigation? There is no secrecy. The ugliest part of the leaks is what happened a few days ago. Where did we know about this indictment? From the media, the delegation of the International Tribunal, the delegation of Prosecutor Belmar met with the Lebanese General Prosecutor. At the time where they were sitting down with each other, we didn't know if he was informed or not. Even at the time of the meeting, the names began to be leaked to the media. Who leaked these names of the accused? Belmar the second day said, no, the names are secret. If they are secret, go ahead and investigate how these names were leaked before the Lebanese General Prosecutor or after he was informed. But at the time where he was meeting with the delegation from the Tribunal, the names were leaked. How did some television stations know? There was a media race about announcing the names. And also, when it comes to behavior in Lebanon, some people, of course, we have arrest warrants issued against some people for certain reasons. Even when it comes to the spies, they say BJMA. They leak the initials. They speak about the initials. But in this case of a tribunal, why were the full names released and this media campaign launched? Because there was a clear aim, as I said. So where is the secrecy of the investigation? Where is the secrecy of the names? This is also an important subject. And this leads us to question the investigation and what this investigation was based on. And was an investigation issued about how these names were leaked from his office or from the Lebanese General Prosecutor? No, he didn't. The last point regarding this subject about the investigation and the indictment is taking advantage of this politically, taking advantage of the indictment politically. for the sake of a certain political team, not for the sake of the truth. You all remember, of course, I forgot one issue, the names which were mentioned or which were leaked and which are linked to the indictment. These names are exactly the same as the names which were leaked to the Der Spiegel German magazine and the Canadian television before. Of course, some names were mentioned in Der Spiegel and Canadian television, which were not mentioned in the indictment this time, because Mr. Belmar is saying that other indictments will be issued in the future, because there are some people who are very smart and say, see, not all the names were mentioned, meaning there are no leaks. But no, Belmar clarified this and said other indictments will be issued, taking advantage of the indictment politically. Now, Der Spiegel, when did it come and publish the investigation and the names? You all remember during the elections of year 2009, there were parliamentary elections at that time in Lebanon, and there were certain politicians, political teams who spent more than $1 billion, $2 million, nearly around $3 billion, some say. Part of the political battle was what was published in Der Spiegel, and the accusation and the talk that in 2 weeks or in 3 weeks an indictment will be released against this person and that person. This was during the time of the parliamentary elections 2009. Recently, when the former government collapsed and we headed towards the ministerial consultations to name a new prime minister, they also used this indictment once again, Belmar and Francine, in order to put pressure on everyone in Lebanon and on the parliament. Number three, on the eve of the celebration of the 13th of March, the March 14 annual celebration, they also spoke about this issue of the indictment and accusing certain sides. And the last time, a few days ago, they saw in the end, I won't say they tried to disrupt the cabinet policy statement, they released this indictment to disrupt the government getting trust, a vote of confidence. Why did they release it now? Because they were betting on the incapability of the, or on the failure of the new majority in forming a government. So they were surprised the government was formed, as a lot of people were surprised. Now, it's very clear that the cabinet policy statement, there were some arguments, but it will be solved. So let's go ahead and release the indictment before the government gets a vote of confidence, because what is required is to overthrow the government of Najib Mikati, whatever be the price. Of course, the issue of the cabinet policy statement and the clause of the tribunal is something which is not really an issue. The main issue is they want to overthrow this government. The indictment came to give a weapon to the MPs of the opposing political side, for the politicians of the opposing side to overthrow the government. This indictment is a way to reach the authority, political rule, not a way to uncover the truth. This is all part of taking advantage of the indictment politically for the sake of one political faction against the other, or one political team against the other. This is the first issue regarding the indictment and the investigation. A second issue regarding the tribunal. Some people might say that let these people, let them turn themselves over to the tribunal. There will be a defense. There will be lawyers who will defend them. Let them prove their innocence. What's the problem? First of all, this tribunal, we don't want to go back and repeat the debate about its legitimacy, its legality, its constitutionality, and all the press conferences which we held. We spoke about this previously, and how this tribunal was formed, and who made the decision to form it, and what are the main aims of this. Second of all, we have many reservations which shed doubt regarding the laws which this tribunal is based upon, especially when it comes to the measures and the amendments made. There is a law in order to facilitate issuing a ruling against those who they want to rule against, and I don't want to repeat this because this was explained before. Number three, This general prosecutor and this tribunal is not fair, unjust, and the evidence is what happened to the four generals. Was the general prosecutor fair to them? Was the tribunal fair to them? One of the four generals, Jamil al-Sayed, ever since he was released from prison, he is continuing with his efforts. He is issuing, filing complaints. He didn't get the most basic of rights. For someone who is innocent and who was accused unjustly and imprisoned for 4 years. Do you expect from this tribunal to be fair to resistance fighters who fought against Israel? Number four, let's look at who we should resort to. The president of the tribunal is Mr. Kasisi, Anthony Kasisi. Who is Mr. Kasisi? And when we say the president of the tribunal, he is responsible for how this tribunal works. He was responsible for achieving justice. He is president of the tribunal, which must bring about justice. Who is Mr. Kasisi? Once again, we will look at two reports. The first report, I will give you a summary for the people themselves. Mr. Antonio Kasisi, he is a great friend of Israel, according to a testimony of one of his friends who testified to the Herzliya conference. Kasisi's friend was speaking in a Herzliya conference. He was invited to Herzliya. Kasisi didn't go. He was invited. At the end of his speech, he remembered and he went back to the podium. He apologized for Antonio Kasisi for being absent. This is a testimony for Kasisi's friend. Let's look at it. The name Antonio Kasisi, he is Italian and he formerly worked as the president of the former Yugoslavian court. He is now the president of the Special Tribunal for Lebanon. Who is Antonio Kasisi? The Herzliya conference, the date is the 3rd of February 2010, the occasion, it is one of the most important conferences which bring together the leaders of the Zionist enemy together with other international leaders. Many ministers from the Zionist entity participate and members of the Knesset and envoys of the Israeli organizations in foreign countries. The speaker was Professor George Fletcher. He is from America, and he is a media person. He has written a lot of articles. He worked in many universities and worked as a visiting scholar in a university in Jerusalem, Al-Quds, in 1972 and 1973. And in 1993, he also, in the year 2010, he was in a vacation to the Columbian University, to the University of Columbia. And he was in the Shalom Hartman Center in Jerusalem, Al-Quds. He has also a role in drawing up the policies of the Zionist entity. We will now present to you a video of Professor Fletcher, whereby he recalls Kasisi after ending his speech. Let's look at it. He goes back to the podium only to introduce Antonio Kasisi.
Kasisi is a professor of international law at the University of Milano. He was the first president of the ICTY, the Tribunal for the Former Yugoslavia. He is the author of many books on international criminal law. He's a great friend of Israel. He's a great friend of ours, of the people here on the panel.
So we are required to cooperate with a great friend of Israel, the president of the tribunal, who is required to uncover the truth and look at all the possibilities, or call on the general prosecutor to look at all possibilities, and who is also called upon to achieve justice. We will add to him add to this, is he only a great friend to Israel? No, even more than that. He also considers the resistance and the activities of resistance as terrorism activities, terrorist activity, terrorist acts, and the resistance movements as terrorist movements. Can you believe it? Someone who we are called upon to cooperate with, he considers the resistance fighters as terrorists, and they want him to achieve justice. I hear from some of our brothers and some lawyers, some judges, that if there is something called being uncomfortable, if you there is an enmity between you and a certain judge, you can request from this judge to be replaced with someone else. But look at this, a tribunal which must uncover the truth, its president is a great friend of Israel, and he considers that the resistance is a terrorist movement. There is a document which he has signed and which he sends as a response to the Israelis. He's trying to advise them regarding some matters related to the Gaza events. Let's look at part of this statement. The message of Qassisi on the 21st of April 2006, Antonio Qassisi released a statement signed by his own hand, whereby he speaks to the Zionist entity after a lawsuit was filed in a United States court against Abraham Dachter, the head of Israeli intelligence and the former Minister of Security. He spoke about law. He spoke a lot about the laws of war and how to deal with civilians and armed people in order to behave according to human rights laws. And although he believes that some violations occurred, he accused these violations as well. He says, for example, I wrote this statement because I strongly believe that a democratic state such as Israel, as you can see, is built on the principles of the rule of law and respect for human rights. Number two, what distinguishes Israel as the only democratic state in the area from other states that are instead authoritarian and constantly trample upon human rights is precisely that it focuses or it keeps its attention on the values of human rights and justice. And in Qassisi's statement, he also speaks about Israel's occupation of a Gaza Strip, and he uses the term occupation. He confesses that Israel occupied other people's territory, but he also considers that this occupation led to the Palestinians to resorting to terrorist acts, meaning he considers the Palestinian response to occupation as terrorism and not resistance. Imagine that Israel, according to Qassisi, is the only country in the region which is being ruled by law and whereby human rights are being cared for. What happened to the Palestinians for more than 60 years, the massacres which were committed in the Gaza Strip of just a few years ago, around 11,000 Palestinian prisoners, including women, children, and elderly, and sick people. All of this is human rights, according to Qassisi. The massacres which were committed by Israel in Lebanon, outside Lebanon, the assaults, the bombing, the destruction, according to Qassisi, there's no problem with all of this, because what the rule is for human rights. There is a rule for human rights in Israel, and Israel is waging a war on terrorism, according to Qassisi. Even the inhabitants of Gaza, those whom Qassisi confesses that their territory is occupied, he considers their resistance is terrorism. This is the tribunal, and this is its president. Can a tribunal with such a history, with such laws, with such a CV, with a president, such a tribunal, can it lead to the truth? Can it achieve justice? I will go now to the last main subject, the current situation. Regarding the current situation, yes, a decision has been made, an indictment has been released an indictment has been released against a number of resistance fighters. And as I said before, some of them have a long history, an honorable history in confronting or combating the occupation. In order to confront this situation, I have something I want to say to the people. I have something I want to say to the March 14 people, March 14 figures, and I want to say something as well to the supporters of resistance, and in the end I will summarize our stance. To the people, I say everything you heard, everything which was said, what the Israelis are saying today, because the Israelis over these past few days, they have said that Lebanon is now witnessing a tidal wave, a storm. Lebanon is sitting on a volcano which will erupt. A civil war will erupt in Lebanon. This is what the Israelis are saying. These are the Israeli wishes. These are the Israeli hopes. These are the Israeli plans. They planned for this. For this reason, God willing, because of the vigilance of the Lebanese people, we will not witness any sectarian divisions in Lebanon. We won't witness any sedition in Lebanon, especially between Sunni and Shia or Shia and Sunni. I said this 1 year ago, 2 years ago, and before that I said one of the aims of this tribunal, one of the aims of this international investigative committee is to create sedition amongst the Lebanese, divisions amongst Sunni and Shia, but this will not happen. Once again, I will tell you, after the release of this indictment, of the so-called indictment, we shall not see any divisions amongst the Lebanese, any sedition between Sunni and Shia in Lebanon. We will not see a civil war in Lebanon. And for this reason, everyone, our people in all areas, from all different affiliations, they should feel comfortable and be confident. And I believe that one of the important factors to prevent any sectarian division is for there to be, and I must focus on this, is for there to be a government which is responsible and a government which has trust and a government which is prepared to deal in a nationalistic spirit with an event of such magnitude, not with a spirit of hatred, nor with the spirit of revenge, nor with the spirit of confrontation. There must be a government which was never part of this war which began 6 years ago against the resistance in Lebanon. And so I'd like to tell the people, be assured, rest assured, and see nothing happened and nothing will happen, except if someone might come in and conspire. However, I believe that all of the honest sides who are keen on preserving calm in Lebanon will do their utmost. They are very keen on dealing with this event, on dealing with this matter via other means, via political means, judicial means, legal means. Whatever be our background or stance towards this event, what is required is that we preserve our country and prevent anyone from achieving one of the aims of assassinating the Marty Rafiq al-Hariri and one of the aims of the fabricated investigation into the assassination of Rafiq Hariri and one of the aims of the International Tribunal. So to all the people I say, rest assured, let everything be normal and there is nothing to worry about. Number two, I'd like to tell the March 14 forces or the March 14 camp, now you believe that you are opposition. You oppose the Najib Mikati government. That's your right to practice political opposition. There's no problem with that. And I know that you'll take advantage of the indictment in order to confront this government in parliament. And this is your natural right. This is an international game. The international game was always in your service anyway, at your service. The resistance movements here, they were always based upon a popular will against an entity which is supported internationally. And so if the international game is helping you at some times to select the appropriate time, that's okay. But I have two pieces of advice for you, or two ideas for you, because some people might not accept me to advise them because they believe they're above my advice. The first piece of advice I have is, do not hold the Najib Mikati government responsible for this file. And this, the Saad Hariri government would not have been able to put up with this issue as well. Some people have begun to say that the government must go, the government must arrest, the government must launch raids, the government must do this and do that. I'd like to ask you a question. If there wasn't a government today headed by Najib Mikati, if this government was headed by Saad al-Din al-Hariri, or if it was headed by Fuad Sanyura, if it wasn't a national unity government, let's go to the most difficult circumstances. If it was a March 14 government, if we had an interior minister and a justice minister and a defense minister who are very extreme March 14 figures, would this government, would it have been able to go ahead and arrest these people, arrest these Hezbollah members? Would it have been able to do so? Would it have been able to carry out the arrest warrants which were issued by Prosecutor Belmar? It wouldn't have been able to do so. And I can tell you, we all know this it couldn't even have done less than that, less than arresting them. So don't assigned to Najib Mikati or the country such tasks. If the government was your government, if it was a government of March 14 extremists, it wouldn't have been able to do this, to arrest those who were named in the indictment. So let things go forward naturally. We are behaving according to not cornering the government, not cornering anyone. And I believe that in 30 days or 60 days or 1 year or 30 years, 300 years, even after 300 years pass, you cannot arrest or take anyone in because the game is well known. And so after the thus, Mr. Kasizi will come or Mr. Belmar will come, I don't know who, and they will say, come, let's go to a trial in absentia. Trials in absentia will be held and the ruling or the judgment has already been made. What remains is that they can work on us as Lebanese 6 months, 1 year, 2 years, 10 years. This is related to politics. It's related to money. It's also related to jobs. It's related to psychological warfare. The tribunal might end in 6 months, might need 30 years. God knows, that's their game. So regarding Lebanon, do not make Lebanon carry a load which it cannot carry. Do not make the government carry a load which it cannot carry. You know, you can't even carry this load, even if you were in the government. Number two, or the second piece of advice I have, the second idea, whatever you want to name it, do not demand of Najib Mikati in the votes of confidence in the parliamentary sessions, do not demand of Najib Mikati's government what Saad Hariri accepted to abandon in order for him to stay in power. And if you want, I don't have any problem. I didn't speak about this in the media out of respect. However, when there is a political battle and public opinion and justice and fairness, we might turn something, we might present something. But if our colleagues in March 14, if they want, I have no problem. I can send them a copy of the arrest warrant, the copied arrest warrant, which was given to me by the Qatari Prime Minister and the Turkish Foreign Minister. Both of them were there and they met with me and they gave me this arrest warrant, this document, and they said, this document shows Saad Hariri's acceptance. Saad Hariri has accepted everything contained in this document. We were there and we stayed for 4 or 5 hours and we amended, we corrected, and this is the end document. If the March 14 figures want, if you want to see this document, what Saad Hariri had accepted, accept from Mikati what Saad Hariri had accepted. And so do not make Najib Mikati and his government carry a load which others didn't carry. And at that time, at that period, if we had accepted Saad Hariri as a prime minister, this document would have been signed because in the end, there is a signature. At that time, they told me, if you accept, they say, the Saad Hariri, one of them will sign, and so will the Turkish side, so will the Qataris, the Saudis, the French. The Syrians, they informed us of this, and they even said that Mrs. Clinton will bless this document with her signature. But at that time, we didn't accept for certain nationalist reasons. I told them my concern is not the tribunal today. My concern is the country. I believe that because of the behavior and the performance and the evaluation, I believe that a government headed by Saad Hariri is not a government which can overcome the problems of this country and take the country into a safe stage, a safe period. For that reason, we didn't sign the document. If we had accepted, everything contained in this document related to the tribunal would have become official and the government would have voted on it and countries would have adopted it. So, in this point, I will also like to end my advice to the March 14. The last thing I'd like to say to the supporters of the resistance, of course, I'd also like to draw your attention. About 1 year ago, they said, even if the arrest warrants are released, even if the indictment is released, we have our own minds, our brains. If we look at the evidence, if the evidence is clear-cut evidence, we will adopt the indictment. Isn't this the rhetoric they use? They said, we have our brains. We can look at this, and if the evidence is not correct or if the evidence is not clear-cut evidence, if it's suspicious evidence, then we won't accept it. We won't accept the indictment. So why don't they speak in this way now? Until now, evidence hasn't been presented. The general prosecutor says that he doesn't want to uncover the evidence. Why did you consider now that this is the truth? Why did you consider this is a historic day and we are very close to the truth, although you haven't looked into the evidence, on the outside at least, until now? I'd like to tell the supporters of resistance and those who love the resistance, those who pin their hopes of a resistance, I'd like to tell them, rest assured, this is part of the war which we are waging together ever since the establishment of this entity which stole occupied Palestine, and the assaults on Lebanon have begun ever since the establishment of this entity. Some consider ever since 1948 nothing has happened, but they don't read history. The massacres were committed in the border villages, and there are Lebanese, many Lebanese, who raised the flag of the resistance and fought ever since the establishment of this entity. They even supported the Palestinian resistance when it was forced to flee to Lebanon, and they continued their resistance after 1982. And the resistance, even the Lebanese resistance, took its popular perspective, popular color afterwards. This is part of the media war, psychological war. This is part of the war of trust, of self-confidence, confidence in others, a war of our choice, the war of our direction, the war of hope. And so this is part of the war which is completing the destruction of the houses, the killing of women and children, the committing of massacres, the destruction of infrastructure, the bloody confrontations, the falling of martyrs, the wounded, and the arresting of thousands of prisoners. This is part of this war. And so from our perspective, this is no surprise, and it doesn't affect us because we have gotten used to this. We have prepared ourselves for this war, and we have prepared ourselves ever since 1982, ever since we adopted, we took this choice. We knew that taking the path of resistance to liberate Lebanon and to support the resistance movements to liberate Palestine, we knew that adopting this choice means entering the confrontation with the Western Israeli project, and we must put up with the repercussions, which means killing your leaders, killing women and children, killing your people, displaced people, tarnishing their image, destruction, assaults, false accusations, false tribunals, unjust tribunals. This is something normal, and so we must deal with it as something which is normal, something which we expect. And so I'd like to tell you, they will not harm us and not harm you. They will not nail our image, nail our will. They will not nail your will. We are determined to continue to walk on this path which enabled us to liberate our territory, this path which enabled us to protect our country, which means the path of resistance, the path which enabled us to change, as I explained before, to change the Israeli security equation, which was based upon the following ever since Ben-Gurion. The security equation was that the home front was protected, the Israeli home front was protected. This resistance in Lebanon changed that equation, together with the Palestinian resistance in Palestine and the resistance countries with their support as well. And so there will be no problem. This is something which we will confront with all clarity, with firmness, with courage, with confidence, and they will not be able to nail us or to harm us. And in brief, I'd like to also add to our supporters, there are some who will attempt to provoke you in the upcoming weeks. Some here in Lebanon, some politicians, they want divisions, they want sedition amongst Sunni and Shia. However, I'd like to be very clear and transparent. At least some of the Christians of the March 14 Alliance are dreaming of this, are dreaming of division, dreaming of divisions. They dreamt before and they failed. So for this reason, I'd like to tell you, there might be provocations here or there. You might hear some bad language here or there. However, do not listen to all what is said. Do not listen to these provocations. They want us to go into a confrontation on the street, to an internal confrontation. But from our perspective, for the sake of our country, for the sake of our people, for the sake of a security and stability and civil peace, for the sake of all of this, we must be patient in confronting any provocation. Although the biggest provocation happened via these arrest warrants against the Hezbollah honorable, the honorable Hezbollah fighters. In brief, at the end of this speech, I'd like to say that this investigation and this tribunal, ever since it was established, it was for a certain political goal, a clear political goal. The investigation was never a professional investigation. It was in order to serve the goal, which was a preemptive goal decided before. The tribunal and its laws and its president, at least, they were selected in order to serve this same aim, and the indictment which was released a few days ago is a step in that direction. And this investigation and this tribunal and these decisions, from our perspective, they are American Israeli decisions. And based upon all of this, we refuse it, and we refuse anything released by this tribunal. False accusations and false rulings. We consider the tribunal as an assault on us and on our fighters, and unjust against the honorable people in our Ummah. We will not allow this tribunal to weaken us, nor to nail our will or nail our dignity. And we will also not allow this tribunal to drag Lebanon into a sectarian confrontation and sectarian divisions. This is the way we will behave. We are the most concerned party with this unjustness, with this injustice, sorry, and the other side which is oppressed is Truth, Justice, and the Rafiq Hariri and those who were killed with them. They also have been harmed by the injustice. The government in Lebanon, the officials in Lebanon, all of us, we can behave according to the reality they believe in and the responsibility they feel. However, if we resort to our minds, if we act wisely, I believe that we can take Lebanon from this event which the Israelis were waiting for. They've been waiting for since years. They've been waiting for this volcano to erupt and to be with flames. I believe, let's make the Israelis' hopes fail. The Israeli bets will be wrong bets. This resistance, before the indictment and after the indictment and before the tribunal and after it and before Kassizi and Belmar and Lemon and Millis and all those who support them, this resistance is a strong resistance, a resistance of faith, a solid resistance. When it went to the battlefield, nobody stood with it. And today, the resistance is in better shape than it ever was before. Do not fear for this resistance. Do not be worried about this resistance. Do not worry for it. And assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Well, we've been just looking at the Secretary General of the Lebanese resistance, said Hassan Nasrallah, and basically talking about the situation. Of course, we know about the Hariri Tribunal, that they have come out with indictments of four Hezbollah members, that basically said Hassan Nasrallah said was something to be totally ignored, because what he has talked about in the last, let's see, hour and a half, basically is trying to point out, according to what he was saying, how this tribunal had been set up basically by the Americans and the Israelis to destroy, first of all, the Syrians in the beginning, and then the resistance itself, Hezbollah. Basically, he talked about and gave what he called as proof that this was not a non-biased tribunal. He talked about the biases of those, even the head of the tribunal, showing footage of that he's very pro-Israeli, very supportive of the Israelis, and very anti-Hezbollah, and basically called the resistance movement, Hezbollah resistance movement, as a terrorist organization. Basically, his point was that from the very beginning, this was a plot to destroy the resistance, and still today it continues to be a plot now to destroy the new government, Miqati government in Lebanon, and the resistance itself. His basic words at the end, of course, was to the resistance, members of the resistance, that there is nothing to fear because they are on the right path, as he called it, in the right direction, and that as long as they do not be emotional and be patient with all the plots, as he called them, that will come their way, that they will be victorious, and that nothing of this, none of this is unexpected, because when they made that commitment in the 80s that they were going to be a strong resistant movement, this is just part of the war as far as trying to destroy the movement of Hezbollah. We're going to switch over. I'd like to switch over to London, where we have Middle East expert affair from Middle East expert, Mr. Zayed Al-Issa. Thank you for joining us, Mr. Al-Issa. Hopefully you heard the whole speech of Sayed Hassan Nasrallah.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Okay. Your perspective.